listening to Unbreakable. This podcast shines the light on family and domestic violence. We discuss the various forms of family and domestic violence, what it looks like, and we talk to the experts and survivors. Unbreakable is sponsored by DV Assist, a free counselling and web chat service for people living in regional, rural, and remote Western Australia. They support anyone experiencing family and domestic violence. Some of the content in this episode may be confronting or distressing. We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians upon the land on which we record this podcast today and extend our respects to those listening on regional, rural and remote Western Australia. Family and domestic violence affects people from all walks of life. We understand men and LGBTIQA+ experience family and domestic violence. However, statistics show women are more overrepresented. For this purpose, in the podcast, we will refer to she when discussing people experiencing violence and he when discussing people who use violence.
We advise names and details of all individuals, events and identifiable characteristics in the following story have been changed to protect their privacy. In the last episode, Sam shared some of her story. Sam was in a relationship with Brad for 2 years and experienced isolation, financial control, other controlling behaviours, gaslighting, physical assault, sexual coercion, and assaults on her beloved dog. Sam was living in coercive control. Brad was gradually breaking her down, isolating her from her supports and controlling all aspects of her life, and it left Sam questioning her sanity and existence. Today we continue with Sam's story. We also explore the impact family and domestic violence has and how to make it out the other side.
So thanks for sharing your story with us, Sam. I can only imagine how difficult that's been for you for the last few years, not only being in that relationship and also the time since. Now, since the relationship ended with Brad over 2 years ago now, are you able to tell us a little bit more about your life now?
Of course. So obviously there's a lot of probably psychological damage, I think, from all of it. I don't find that I trust people or want to put myself out there as much anymore. I used to be really outgoing and really sociable and nothing really bothered me. I never thought about, you know, not going to a party or not knowing people when I was there. Whereas now I find I'm a little bit more of a recluse. I don't really go out much anymore. I don't feel comfortable if I don't know people. I'm very, very untrusting. A lot of friends have even said they've noticed a huge difference. I'm not the same. I'm always very on edge and, yeah, I'm just not the same happy, trusting person that I used to be. I meet people now and I'm always wondering what their agenda is and, you know, how much they're telling me is true and, you know, are they genuine, you know, and I found that a lot of them aren't. It took me more than a year to even attempt at dating again, and I'd find I'd start talking to people online, but then the moment that I met them, I was like, you don't look like your pictures, you're not the same, and that just brings up all that anxiety because, you know, if they've lied to you online about those little things, then what else are they kind of capable with? I find that I read into a lot more. And then when I do meet someone, I want them to make me feel like I am whole. So I constantly want them to tell me that they want to be with me, show me affection, tell me that it's okay that I'm not like fully fixed, that they're fine with my insecurities. And I find that I'm constantly telling them what I've gone through so that they understand why I am like I am. But then that kind of pushes them away. So I don't think I have dealt with that side of my problems enough yet. So I am in the process of starting counselling and trying to work on that side of things. I found that I really hated who I was. So I put on a lot of weight because I didn't really take care of myself anymore. I started drinking way, way more than I should. And that probably made things worse, but I coped with alcohol and isolation. So now I've probably put on 20 odd kilos. I don't like what I see in the mirror anymore, and I really gave up on who I was because I just didn't think that I was worth it. because I had been told for so long that I wasn't pretty, that no one would love me, that I would be alone for the rest of my life. And I think the thought of spending the rest of my life alone probably terrifies me more than anything else, because I don't want to be alone. I want someone to share my life with, and I feel like he's really taken so much from me, but I'm giving him power by living my life this way. So I need to learn how to take that power back and empower myself again, which, yeah, that I don't quite know how to do yet. So I've started with little goals. So I started a beauty regime a few weeks ago, because I figured if I had to do something morning and night, that would make myself love me. I had to care for myself. So just really little steps. I still struggle to go to the gym. I'm too worried about what everybody else is thinking, and that just makes me so anxious. So I haven't overcome that fear enough to get to the pool or the gym yet, but I'm working on that. So, yeah, there's a lot, but it's worth it, because I would rather be where I am now, and I have a hell of a lot more than I had with him. I bought my own house, which I never would have done if I was with him. I'm successful in my job now, which for a long time I wasn't. When I was with him, I was actually a manager at the company that I still work at. I actually had to leave and step down because he was affecting my life so badly I couldn't actually perform at work. So I've stepped down and I've realised that I don't want to go back up. I love what I do. I have a lot of work-life balance. I didn't really know anyone that I worked with very well. I kept myself isolated from them because they did find out what happened, and a lot of people gossiped and obviously had their own opinions. And I didn't want to hear it, so I never gave them the time of day to understand it. But in the last sort of 6 months, they've all noticed that I had still been struggling, and a lot of them have reached out, which was really lovely. So, yeah, there's a lot of people out there who do want to help, but you've got to put yourself out there. So that's been my hardest sort of hurdle at the moment.
I think that's the hardest thing for people that have experienced trauma, and in particular domestic and family violence, is actually getting out there and saying, I need help. And so many people feel so alone. I hear that all the time. I don't know who to turn to. I don't know where to go. What support is out there? There's no one there. And I often tell people, you are not alone. There's always people out there. You know, if it's not friends or family, there's services that can help. DV Assist is a classic example of that here, where we can support people. So you're never alone. But that moment of first disclosure and reaching out for help is extremely daunting for most people to say, I need help.
It's terrifying. I remember when I first opened up to my HR manager and told her what was happening, the look of horror on her face, I just wanted to stop talking because I didn't want anyone to feel sorry for me. And that was my life. But she was so horrified that I was going through that and no one knew. And you feel judged and vulnerable and so open, like you feel exposed. All of a sudden everybody knows, it's not just one person. You know, then the head of the company found out, all the staff members found out, my family found out, friends found out, and all of a sudden you just feel so like, oh my God, what is everybody going to say? You're so under the spotlight and so exposed, and you don't really get to explain it in sense. It's more like a rumor mill, and everyone kind of hears snippets, and then people want to know, but they want to know for gossip. They don't want to know because they're wanting to know how you are, and that's hard. You know, you go from having this huge secret that life can be okay because no one knows about it and you get to pretend it's not happening, but then once people know, you have to deal with the facts of what's actually going on in your life. And that's a hard thing to actually have to do, you know, and admit, yes, I have been living like this, and yes, I have been lying to all of you and, you know, protecting this man who's done this. And yeah, it's it's not easy at all.
And it's almost like in a weird way, by you not disclosing and telling anyone, whether it's your friends, your family, your co-workers, in a way you're controlling the narrative. You're controlling who knows how to handle it, even though you're crying inside saying, I need help. But by not telling anybody, you're actually controlling the narrative in a way by stopping the gossip. And I'm really sorry that you've heard that you've experienced that people wanted to know for gossip reasons as opposed to genuine empathy and compassion.
But sometimes as well, that's the only thing in your life that you actually get to control.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people who have eating disorders because it's the only thing that they can control.
Yeah.
And when you can't control anything else, you try to find just the smallest little thing that you get to look after and that you can control. And yeah, it's hard to then have nothing. So, and the worst thing about it as well is everybody says, why did you stay? Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you stop it? And all the blame comes on you after everything that you've endured.
Yeah.
For 2 years, it's not, oh my gosh, why would he do that to you? Why didn't anyone stop him? We wish we knew so we could help. It's, why did you stay? Why didn't you stop it? Why didn't you tell us? And it's like, come on, blame me some more. You know, you've just had the whole 2 years of everything that's happened to you blamed on you from your partner, and now everyone else joins in. And I think that's why people don't talk up, because you do feel like it's your fault. The system's definitely not set up to help the abused. So because he had keys to our house, I couldn't go back for 3 weeks. So I had to ring a hotline. I went through and asked me all these questions, and they told me he was the highest category risk. So I had to go get a restraining order because he was so likely to end up killing me there was definitely, I couldn't go back. I got told that I could go through a system where they would help me pay for the locks to be changed. It took them 2.5 weeks to come back and say, sorry, the budget's at its max and they can't help me. So I had to pay $400 to have all the locks done. But in the meantime, I had to put my dog with friends, but I couldn't stay at the same place because they only had on-street parking and he knew them. So if he'd driven by, he would have known I was there. So I couch surfed for 3 weeks going from person to person's house before I could finally get them locked and go home. The support people, they didn't really check in like they said that they were going to. Once I'd kind of got the restraining order, that was it. I was on my own. There was no extra support. There was nothing. And even then, getting the restraining order was humiliating, having to stand there and explain what had happened and having these people sit around and kind of judge you, and you're being video recorded and you're in a courtroom. And even then they sort of say, well, he gets to contest this. So, you know, if he does, you're going to be back here in 6 months to do it in front of a whole sort of judge and jury kind of thing. And yeah. But then to get it taken away, it was like that. It was so simple. It took 2 minutes instead of, I think I was there for 3 hours to get the restraining order put against him. And then it took the police a week before they even served him. And I had to keep calling them and saying, he'll be at this location at this time. Please go serve him. I cannot go home until you have served him. And he knew something was going on. Like, it wasn't immediate. Like, nothing happened in a timely fashion. It was, okay, you've done it now. We'll let you know when we've served him. And I was like, well, I've given you his work address, you know, his home address. I've given you his friend's address. Like, why can't it be done now? But it wasn't. It was me constantly ringing them and telling them. And, yeah, the whole sort of thing was so overwhelming. And I think that's another reason that I did end up going back, because I didn't feel supported by anybody. So the only support I had was from this man who kept telling me he was sorry. And yeah, I went back. So,
and it sounds like you did everything you could to leave. You reached out and spoke to the police, you reached out to helplines, you really reached out to Safe at Home. You've done everything that a person is supposed to do to just leave. And then in the end, the irony was you were safer
for lack of a better word, to be back with your abuser.
Yeah. Because if I was back with him, the threats would stop, the stalking would stop. He was being extra nice because he wanted things to go back to normal. So it was easier.
It was looking externally for that protection, but being really let down by the systems in place.
Definitely, yeah. And it made it harder to leave the next time because I knew that when I did leave, I would be doing it 100% alone. There wouldn't be the cops that I could call or anything else. And, yeah, when he did take everything, I just let it happen. It was just easier then because there's nothing the cops were going to do. Like nothing at all. And they kept saying, you know, put another restraining order on and, you know, we'll be there to help. And I was like, but you're not. You're not at all. Mm-hmm. And one of the sergeants gave me his direct phone number. But I can't put that responsibility on one person. That's too much, you know. He has so much other things that he's doing. I couldn't expect one person to try and manage my ex because he wasn't an easy person. So I didn't end up using it. I appreciated the gesture, but I was lucky enough that he had someone else at the time when I finally decided to say, I'm done. So he did just walk away the second time. But if he hadn't, it would have just started all over again. So.
And so to kind of finish off today, Sam, is there anything that you'd like to say to people who may be experiencing violence?
It's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done, but get out, because life is not meant to be lived that way at all. It's better without them. 1 year of struggle is better than a lifetime of abuse. So.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam, for sharing your story today. All we can say is you've shown immense courage in telling your story today and sharing it with us and our listeners, and we really hope you wish you the best of luck.
As we heard from Sam, her relationship with Brad took a toll on her. Sam was feeling a lack of support and was fearful. Sam was so scared Brad was going to kill her, and this was the impetus to leave the relationship. But it wasn't without its challenges. Sam is now making her way through the trauma. Sam has accepted what happened to her and is at the next stage of recovery. Recovery takes time, and by reaching out to friends, family, support groups, counsellors, and implementing self-care strategies can all help. Every survivor has a different way of making it through to the other side. It can look different for everyone. It's important to know there is a way through to the other side and you don't have to do it alone. Sam is continuing to take her power back, empowering herself by making goals and achieving milestones. Sam's story also shines a light on the role of everyone in the community in better supporting, believing, and uplifting people who have experienced violence, moving away from blaming to further understanding. We thank Sam for sharing her story, and no matter what, they will not break me. All people featured on this podcast have been de-identified to protect confidentiality. We acknowledge the duration of our podcasts are short and only provide a snapshot of the complex and sensitive topic being discussed. If this content has been upsetting or distressing, recommended support services include DV Assist on 1800 080 083, 1800 Respect on 1800 737 732, or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Visit our website for a range of information and support at www.dvassist.org.au. If you would like to suggest a topic or share your story, please contact us at community@dvassist.org.au. If you have any feedback about this episode, please email us at community@dvassist.org.au. See you next time.